Lastly, she turned to the crone, whose statues often showed her with a lamp in one hand. "Guide me, wise lady," she prayed. "Show me the path I must walk, and do not let me stumble in the dark places that lie ahead." Finally, there were footsteps behind her, and a noise at the door. "My lady," Sir Robar said gently, "pardon, but our time is at an end. We must be back before the dawn breaks." Catelyn rose stiffly. Her knees ached, and she would have given much for a feather bed and a pillow just then. "Thank you, sir. I am ready." They rode in silence through sparse woodland, where the trees leaned drunkenly away from the sea. The nervous whinny of horses and the clank of steel guided them back to Renly's camp. The long ranks of man and horse were armoured in darkness, as black as if the smith had hammered night itself into steel. There were banners to her right, banners to her left, and rank on rank of banners before her. But in the pre-dawn gloom neither colours nor sigils could be discerned. A grey army, Catelyn thought, grey men on grey horses beneath grey banners. As they sat their horses waiting, Renly's shadow knights pointed their lances upward, so she rode through a forest of tall, naked trees, bereft of leaves and life. Where Storm's End stood was only a deeper darkness, a wall of black, through which no stars could shine, but she could see torches moving across the fields where Lord Stannis had made his camp. The candles within Renly's pavilion made the shimmering silken wall seem to glow, transforming the great tent into a magical castle alive with emerald light. Two of the Rainbow Guards stood sentry at the door to the royal pavilion. The green light shone strangely against the purple plums of Sir Palmon's surcoat, and gave a sickly hue to the sunflowers that covered every inch of Sir Eamon's enameled yellow plate. Long silken plumes flew from their helms, and rainbow cloaks draped their shoulders.